So this Scottish man is hiking and he has two black dogs. When I did the double take, they were large. I would probably say black Labradors is what their outward glamour perception was. But when I saw them, they looked straight out of a fantasy film where it looked very forest creature-y, more like jagged lines, fur lines, so it didn't look like fur. And then they had red eyes, and their mouths looked very agape and kind of snarling. And so it was when I turned
Wow.
to see this coming toward me, I was like, oh.
Hello, and welcome to our very first guest episode. And what a special guest she is. Melissa Coons is a psychic medium, friend of the Fae Folk, death doula, and catalyst reader who will change your life. In part one of a two-part conversation, Mel explains how a group of magical pagans gave her first community in the least expected place and learned how to work with, make space for, and hold her own space for ghosts, fae, fairy folk, and demon dogs.
Welcome, everyone, to Light in the Fog podcast. We have our very, very first guest joining us today, and this is a brilliant human being that I've had the honor of knowing for probably about a decade now. This is Melissa Coons, and she is a writer, business owner, and has a passion for supporting others on their healing journey through their coaching and psychic work. And boy, can I attest to that. Melissa works as a communications professional, a tutor, a relationship coach, a grief coach, death doula, which we will definitely be talking about, a tarot reader, and is an ordained minister. When she's not working, she's, well, taking care of her cats, as one must, and turtles, and exploring all of the adventures of life. Welcome, Mel. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here and so honored to be your first guest. This is
Yay.
fantastic.
Thank you for
Excellent.
joining us.
So, you just had an adventure. Do you want to talk a little bit about, like, I'm just going to go straight to everybody we know is in transition right now, and you are also going through a massive, massive transition. Would you be willing to share a little bit of that for us?
Absolutely. So yeah, I'm still in the throes of the adventure, for sure. And that is relocating. So I am a Colorado native, born and raised. I've lived in the metro area of Colorado, Denver, my entire life. There was that brief 5.5 year stint. I went off to Greeley for college and exploring other things.
Ooh, really? Sorry.
Smelly.
I actually loved it. It was my opportunity. I always wanted to live in a small town, and Greeley was as small as I could bear to go. And it definitely had an expiration date, but I'm so excited I got to enjoy it while I was there. So,
Very diplomatic of you. When we were growing up, we called it reality.
I can't.
Because it was just different. There's like a different energy out there for
Yeah,
sure.
there is
There
different
is.
energy, a lot
Well,
of cow.
and I will say my time there had massive impact on my psychic development.
Really?
So we will say
Was it the cows?
it was not the cows, although I did learn there were certain days you could take a deep breath in the morning, and then there were certain days you could not. Because those were the
Absolutely.
days they were burning the blood.
Yes, and for our audience, there's a lot of methane gas in Greeley. I mean Greeley, so folks have a tendency to get like migraines. Like it really does affect your health a little bit.
Does.
Yeah. So okay. So you learned when to breathe and when not to breathe.
Yes. And
What kind of psychic revelation did you have?
well, so I know I'm like, this isn't even answering your question, Trey, but we'll get to it. It's part of the whole journey.
Okay.
That when there, I actually found a psychic pagan community. And I joined the university pagan open circle group. So the university itself had a pagan organization, and it was a group for anyone who did not identify as Christian, Islamic, or Jewish, Islamic, Muslim, Jewish.
Interesting.
So that included Buddhists and Wiccans and just all kinds of different agnostics, pagans, druids, all kinds coming together.
That's amazing.
Yeah, atheists were welcome. And so anybody who had just a different belief system and could come together and share those beliefs and have, it was a place of intelligent discourse and a safe space where we could collectively share those differing opinions and systems and learn and grow from each other. And it was really incredible. And so I just happened to, as the universe does, randomly meet people. I had been much of a hermit.
Random, we're air quoting that. I know. We randomly meet people.
It was one of those where I'm like, okay, divine intervention, because I had been much of a hermit. And a very kind young woman in one of my classes, she had missed an important lecture. We were coming up on midterms. And she was like, hey, could I meet you at this coffee shop and get these notes from you? Sure. So I show up with my notebook to give her the notes on the assignment. And she happened to be meeting a group of other friends. And they were just like, we like you, come with us. And took me on a series of adventures that day. Bookstore, like dinner. And then we ended up at the hookah bar. And it was just these people blew my, and then they introduced me to the pagan group. And it was, I'm still in touch with them nearly, 15 years later. We're still good friends. So it's been amazing to see how they've transformed on their journey. And that they just were like, this human, we're taking her. And they did. So they were the first few people who made me not feel insane for seeing the things that I saw and perceiving the things where I'm like, oh, you do too. Because otherwise, my whole life it had been, you're just an overactive imagination. You're so sensitive, that narrative. And
and to make that connection through a group of people, how special.
Yes. Yes. So Greeley will always have a very special place in my heart because it was a place to blossom.
So Mel, you had said that that was the first time that you'd really met folks who were into the kind of, I don't know, magical shenanigans that you were. So I'm going to actually go into your childhood then. And don't worry, we'll get to the transformation.
Yeah.
So what were you doing your whole childhood? And what kinds of things were you engaged with?
So my whole childhood, in the email you'd sent me, inviting me to this, you had asked, when did you first notice magic and those kind of things? And my answer was always, there was never a time that I didn't see it, which was why I was always confused when other people didn't. And I had to more learn like, oh, okay, you don't see what I see. So, but I know that it's there and I know it's real because I'm getting enough confirmation, whether you acknowledge that that's exactly what it is or just like, oh, it's something weird or it's whatever, like, okay, but you at least picked up on.
What kinds of things would you see?
Definitely saw ghosts. So I am a medium. Mm-hmm. And it freaked me out so much when I was younger that now I don't see them the way that other mediums see them. I see them very protected through my third eye. So I rarely see them in the actual physical except for out of the corner of my eye. And that was just a protection that I had to put on myself because as a child, it was so alarming and terrifying.
Interesting. Very good. Okay. Cause I don't see ghosts either, but I definitely feel them and out of the corner of my eye and stuff.
Yeah.
But like I don't see them like other people do. So interesting.
Yeah. And then I would see fae and fairy folk, all those interdimensional beings. And those I can still see, especially when I'm somewhere where the veil is thinner for that world. So like when I took a trip to Scotland, oh my gosh, it was
Must have been mind-blowing.
It was everywhere. I'd have to blink twice where I'm like, okay, what is somebody else seeing? Oh, that's what they're our that's what the normies are seeing. The neurotypicals.
Normies.
The neurotypicals. I love it. Wow, interesting.
We love all of our brothers and sisters and on.
Absolutely.
No shade.
And, you know, and I mean, the Scotland trip alone could be an episode, because I remember when you did that trip and it was a lot.
It was a lot.
But to focus on the Fae, so different people, what I've kind of noticed is different people have access to different pieces and parts. And I mean, ultimately, we could see all the everything, but there's sort of a natural propensity for certain things with certain people, and there's different clairs. So Jenny, that's why you feel it as opposed to hear it, boom,
yeah,
you know, or see it, you know. And then Mel, you have like this full spectrum. I mean, you're one of the few people I've ever met that literally has the full spectrum of all the clairs and all the everything. So what was, can you give us just a little taste of the Scotland trip? Like, what was the most,
I mean, it was overwhelming in the best way. Because yeah, everything was tuned on so much, and thank goodness for my friend who I went with, who knows this about me. She is more on the agnostic spectrum, so she doesn't fully embrace it the way that I do. She doesn't live it the way that I do, but she understands me. So when I could tell her like those dogs were demons, she was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm fine," but it was alarming watching them.
The dogs aren't fine.
Approach for a minute, because oh my gosh, my heart leapt out of my chest and I had to be like, that is not what is happening in this moment.
Wow.
Like,
now when you say they were demons, like had they transformed visually? Or could you just feel?
No, visually, when I looked at them, there was, because we were hiking a mountain at Balmoral Castle. So Queen Victoria and Queen Elizabeth's, it's their summer home. And we're going up to the Prince Alfred's memorial and hiking this mountain. And other people could hike it normally, so you didn't have to be part of the tour. So this Scottish man is hiking, and he has two black dogs. When I did the double take, they were large. I would probably say black Labradors is what their outward glamour perception was. But when I saw them, they looked straight out of a fantasy film, where it looked very forest creature-y, more like jagged lines, fur lines, so it didn't look like fur. And then they had red eyes, and their mouths looked very agape and kind of snarling. And so it was, wow. When I turned to see this coming toward me, I was like, oh.
retreat.
You're on leashes. Does he know what he's walking? And that's when I had to kind of do a double take and be like, okay, this isn't a dangerous situation. But that was alarming.
Do we know why they looked like that? Like, was there vibes with the man or the dogs themselves?
My understanding and assumption, I don't have an actual answer, is that yes, these were his pets. And when you're in somewhere, especially with Scotland and Ireland, that has such deep roots and ties with the Fae, that I believe that these were just Fae, and they were cohabitating with him, got excited to see a group of people. And
wow.
The thing with Fae is they are entirely neutral beings. So what we would denote as good, bad, that doesn't exist on their spectrum. They just are. And so the image that I saw that seemed quote unquote demonic is just, you know, my Western civilization terminology perception. They didn't have negative energy. They just were. But it was what we would. It was a lot. The nice sparkly pretty fairy fae that, you know, you might, the sprites, it wasn't that kind of imagery. So that's where it was kind of like,
that's fascinating. I didn't know that fae could because I've dealt with fae a little bit, and I know they're neutral, and I didn't know that they could take like the form will like be in dogs or be the forms of dogs or like the dog fae. Like that's very fascinating. I didn't know this.
Yeah. She's booking her trip to Scotland right now.
Yeah, using all the money I have.
Get that ticket. You know, there's another interesting a piece in that. So that whole area just is one big portal, the UK in general, and it calls a lot to like a whole range of Americans that I know. And at first I was thinking, you know, because so much of our roots, like so many of us have some Scottish in us or, you know, some Irish in us or whatever. But it's more than that. It's all my witchy friends where they just like, they hear the call across the moor and they're like, gotta go. And then they all come back with these amazing stories because it's to a certain extent, like a homeland. Mm-hmm. Was that, were you called to go back there? Or?
I almost sold everything and bought a house there. Mm-hmm. I looked at real estate while I was there. I picked the city where I was like, cause we were staying in Ballater, which is right at the base of the Highlands. And so we would drive 2 hours down to Edinburgh to go on our bus trips and tours and see Edinburgh. And so we drove through this little town called Blairgowrie. And I was like, this is it. This is where wow. I would... It was just big enough. Ballater was quite small. And like I said with Greeley, I've already done this small town thing. I needed one a little bit bigger, and Blairgowrie was the perfect size where it wasn't a big city like Edinburgh, which was very overwhelming as well because I was so heightened with all of my sensory perception. And I'm like, there's ghosts over there, there's ghosts in that building, there's ghosts over there. My friend was like, everywhere we've gone you said there's a ghost. I'm like, because they were everywhere.
Wow.
So this is just a really old land, and it's a really active land because it's been actively populated. I actually think that's why I haven't gone to Europe, because I just think it would be too overwhelming because it's just wall to wall, all these other realities pouring in all the time.
It is.
So how did you figure out? Oh, super fun. You know, and you're like, and what time are we going to the pub so I can start turning the volume down on this? And,
right. You know,
I'm going to need it. This is a two Guinness day. So when you said that you found a resonance in that area, did it feel like a home? Not just like, oh, I could live there, but you were like, oh, no. Like, I've been here in past lives. Like, there may be unfinished business for me here.
Wow. Oh, yeah, definitely. 100%. Like, it was definitely a homecoming where I'm like, yep, I've been here. I know this. My soul knows it. Every part of me. It was just on multiple planes of existence. So not just human past lives, but I have very fae energy in my soul. So that's one reason why I'm so tied to them and understand them. So on that, I'm like, yes, I'm home. Let me go create a circle and kidnap some people. It'll be great. I'll let you go.
Just kidding, folks at home.
Fulfilling some stereotypes. Right.
Oh my gosh. So that was how long ago?
That was 2019. Not totally long ago.
Wow. So it was summer right before the pandemic, yeah, too.
And that's why, because I got home and I was checking in where I was like, should I do this? Should I just take this grand adventure? I was at a point in my life where I wasn't particularly tied down to anything. And my guides were like, nope, you can go back when you want to go back, but that's not for you. Sorry. And I was like, are you really?
Meaning now that when you were deciding where to physically relocate.
Meaning then too, because I, like I said, I was ready to do it and it wasn't, they're like, nope, nope, you need to apply for this job and you need to do this. And they did present it to me where it was like, if you want these things and these experiences in your life, that's not the path for you. So, I mean, it wasn't a hard no, don't do it. It was, that takes you in a completely different direction. And the things you're working toward right now that you are identifying as what you really want to experience in your lifetime, you're not going to find there.
Right. Like nothing horrible would happen if you went and did that, right. But it would be like a tangent.
Right, right. It would just significantly postpone the work I was doing and those results. Right. And that's where I was like, okay, then I don't want to do that. I'm working really hard now. So I'll keep working hard and yeah, I can take trips back and maybe toward the latter end of my life, I may find myself there. But again,
we're all going to find ourselves in a pub at some point. It's just going to be all the witches from America and you're just going to pub hop and be like, hey,
find ourselves in Scotland with the fae and the pubs.
Heck yeah. Sounds like a very good party and one I want to be.
Absolutely.
So when did you start talking to your spirit guides and how did you learn? So this is another long and involved question, but you know, how did you learn to navigate that relationship?
So the when is probably always, and I just didn't totally understand that's who I was talking to, versus I knew I was talking to somebody in it, but you know, the community around me didn't necessarily have an answer whether like, was I talking to God? Sometimes yes. Was I talking to ancestors? Sometimes yes. Was I talking to the ghost in the basement? Sometimes yes. So it was kind of like, yeah, I was talking to all of them and all I knew. And then it was, you know, what I've come to learn as my higher self a lot of the time is who I was also having conversations with. And so what gave me this understanding and how I learned to really engage in the conversations and learn to listen was actually that experience in college by connecting with that group of people. They taught me how to open up and how to meditate and how to get into that space. And it was like, this is what you're hearing. Oh, okay. I thought that was just a voice that we all had in the back of our head. Turns out, no. And yeah, so they really helped teach me how to do that.
These like guides coming through you, is it like an actual physical separate voice that you hear, or does it feel like it's coming from your own consciousness? You know, like is it like contained within your thoughts, or is it a completely different voice?
It depends. It's kind of
both.
Sometimes it is an actual different voice, but usually when I hear it as an actual different voice, it'll be like one word. It won't be full sentences. So most of the time when I'm having a conversation, it is me channeling them and then being filtered through my inner dialogue. And we've had conversations about that where I'm like, why can't I hear you like you? And it's mainly like, well, there's a filter. And so we can communicate through your filter, and your filter is your life and your life experiences. So a lot of the time when I'm picking up on other people's emotions, because that happens all the time, especially when I have close ties to people, I'll feel what they're feeling and I'll pick up on whatever they're obsessively thinking about, and I'll start obsessively thinking about it. But I do it in the context of my own life because that's my filter. So I'll have to stop and be like, I'm not bothered by that situation. This isn't me. What the heck is happening? And then I'll be like, I'll go through my list and be like, oh, that person right now is really upset about a work situation. And the closest filter I have was this experience. And so that's
why. Well, that's so interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
So you know enough to like go back in and be like, is this actually mine? And then you figured out a system of where to actually plant it.
Mm-hmm. And that's taken years of practice to learn.
I bet. Right. Oh my goodness.
So remember, Mel and I, we trade some readings every now and again. And one of the things that I find so powerful about you is that you are able, so you use the tarot, which is another filtering, would you say, like a filtering tool or framing tool. But you're always able to get to some really specific pieces of that. So does the life experience thing work in conjunction with the tarot, or does the tarot replace this filtering system that you have?
It's a bit of both. So when I'm doing a reading, it's a multi-part channel at that point, because I'm connected to the person I'm reading for in your energy. So you've allowed me into that space to build that connection, to pull the energy from whatever is on your mind that you're needing guidance about. And then that person's guides will talk to my guides and sometimes talk to me directly. So then I'm channeling those. Wow. So then I can pick up on whatever metaphors will speak to the person I'm talking to. So that's where I can pick up on certain symbolism in the cards that I otherwise wouldn't have seen or paid attention to. Or I'll be told, like, tell this story, talk about this. And I'll be like, oh, okay, well then, yeah. And then I'll relay an example pertaining to my life experience, that filter that I have. Because part of this, and why I have that specific filter in place, is because I do believe in consent and privacy, and I don't want to read your mind. I don't want to know your childhood
Most
trauma.
Most psychics are working real hard not to.
Right. So that's where I'm like, okay, if I pick up on that energy and then they tell me, tell this personal story, I'm okay, because I can tell that story how I want to tell it. And then that person can relate to me, and it's up to them whether or not they want to share their companion story. But I don't want to immediately reach in and be like, oh, you went through, without their consent. Because I've been given consent for readings like that before, and I have uncovered deep childhood trauma. And those are challenging to navigate. How do I talk to you about this?
Right.
Thing.
Wow.
When the setup was, we're having a girls' night and I wanted a reading. Yeah, you can read me whatever you pick up.
And now I'm about to ruin your night and your week.
I'm like, you better grab another sangria.
Oh my goodness.
Phoenix. Yeah, and that's definitely one of the pieces that you have to learn to navigate is So for the folks at home, don't think that we're getting like blow by blow, you know, and this happened and this happened, and this happened. We just get, for me anyway, I just get like really general impressions of things. And man, I will see some really dark, dark energies. And I may not, you know, I would have to talk through it in order to assign it, you know, to specifically whether it was this life or past lives. But the first question I always ask is like, is this person here for that? like, am I the person to have this conversation with them? And I never feel like I'm up to that piece. I'll always kind of flatten it out, and like, I'll still do a lot of like energy clearing around it, just so they can sit more easily with it. But oh my gosh, the specifics, like I feel like there's just a lot of people, the normies don't necessarily have that vocabulary. I'm using your word, the normies. Yeah. So how long did it take you? Cause you're also trained, you're a trained death doula and a counselor. And so did some of that training come in to help, or has this been your instinctual compassion as a fabulous human being?
I would say the training helped hone it, but my instinctual compassion was, as I started really getting into doing readings for other people, you know, as I had mastered it for myself and was like, okay, I can hear these things, I can do these things. And I've been giving readings to people my whole life. I was a party trick in, you know, middle school, where I could do energy readings off of people's jewelry. So we'd have some extra time. Wow. So people would give me their jewelry in the seventh and eighth grade. And I would like, here's a scene from your future. Here's this. And I would describe it to them, the energy that I was picking up on, past, present, or future. And sometimes it would be, you know, decades into the future. Sometimes it would be a few months. Usually it was, sorry, I didn't realize my cat was in the room with me. I kicked the other one out and now I feel bad.
All animals are welcome on these podcasts.
I know. Well, they like to. Brian especially really wanted to join and make himself known.
Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Yeah. So Sue Ellen just came out from under the bed.
We love Brian.
Everybody loves Brian. I love Brian. Big, big fluffy cat. Anyway.
Jewelry, pieces from the future, yeah. Pieces from the
and
past.
And so when I was, 13 giving these readings, it didn't occur to me that I might see something I didn't want to see or something weird. And it wasn't until I started actually training, diving into it, because I had books and was learning how to do it at that age and through high school. So when I got to college and was in a group of people where we could actually work on these things and people more experienced than me that could train it and help me understand. And then I started doing the readings more intentionally and building confidence with them. And then that's when I started obviously getting deeper channelings, deeper energy. Mm-hmm. And so then I would always kind of pause and I would try to be like, okay, in that energy kind of exchange reading, I would try to be like, I saw something and it's kind of intense. Do you want to know about it? And most of the time they always say yes.
Like, how can you say no after that question? Yeah, like, exactly, of course I'm going to say yes. No, I'm good.
Yes, well, tell me the most horrible thing that's going to happen in my future, please.
So I'd try to take into consideration also the setting of where we are. So if other people are around, I don't want to air very personal details. So, and I will admit and own, there are times I intentionally say not exactly what I channeled. And that is in order to soften it. An example, I channeled a young woman that her father had sexually assaulted her growing up. And I was like, okay. And the guides were like, yep, you do need to talk about it because it's impacting her relationships and what she's asking about.
Wow.
And so I told her when I related, I said, I'm picking up that there was a masculine figure, maybe an uncle in a prominent role in your life who took advantage of you in that position. Is that correct? And then she confirmed it and she corrected me that the initial channeling I had was, she's like, yeah, but it wasn't my uncle, it was my dad, and this is what happened. I'm like, okay. I know, but that was your information to choose to disclose or not disclose.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Huh.
And that gives her the opportunity to let you know also, like, how able she is to receive information about it, because if she hadn't said anything or she said, or just nodded, then you would have known maybe to like stay kind of back here.
Exactly. Where it's like, okay, if you're in that place with it, then you're okay for me to then proceed to the next part of the message. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're not in that place with it, then yes, there are times I won't relay the whole message because the person has to be ready to hear the message. And if they're not ready to hear it, my goal and intention is never to, like, I don't want to trigger someone into like the worst moments of their, their life by dragging out all this trauma they weren't ready to face.
Yeah, right. No kidding. Have you ever had their spirit guides and themselves say conflicting things? Like, oh, their spirit guides say that they're ready for this, but then you're talking to the person and they're clearly not ready for this.
Actually, no. I've never had that happen, knock on wood. Usually what I have happen, if they are not ready for it, their energy is so closed off to me that I can't read them at all.
Okay, that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think that's also something that folks don't necessarily know, is that people have the capacity at all times to set their own boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that consent piece is where you are inviting somebody like Mel in to have that access. So now that said, you know, I'm sure we've all had the experience of just passing somebody on the street and maybe they were broadcasting and you're like, whoa, that was a lot going on there. Demon dog, demon dog. You know, but that's not going to necessarily make us stop. And, you know, like you see these shows where the psychic will be casually walking down the street or driving an Uber and being like, do you mind if I tell you about the dead person sitting next to you or whatever?
Yeah,
but that doesn't happen. We have more control in general about our space and, you know, what we're sending out to folks. I think it's more like in people's behaviors. Because a lot of people will want to talk to somebody like you, Mel, because they're repeating patterns and they don't know why. And this is that shortcut that goes to the spiritual level of things that a lot of folks don't. I mean, we all are able to do it, but we don't necessarily have the training, or maybe we're doubting ourselves. So, you know, you end up being this amazing. I mean, you are a public service. You are this conduit for folks to be able to access the information that is there, but for, you know, reasons that they can't connect to it themselves. Now, do you clear energy as well, or do you provide advice for people? Yeah. How are you about telling people what their futures are? There was three questions in that. Pick one at random.
I say all of the above.
All of the above.
So I definitely clear energy if that is something that they're wanting. I always ask, like, would you like an energy clearing? Would you like me to help you with this or whatever? Sometimes I will give them the tools to do it for themselves. So I've had clients where I'm like, you need to reinforce and cleanse your house. I can come and do that for you, or I can tell you what to do so that you can do it. And so I've done both, where they're like, yeah, if you can come just take care of it, great. And then others are like, yeah, I'd really love to. What do I have to do? And I can walk them through it. And then I can provide remote cleansings to help remove blockages. I always do give the disclaimer, though, and it's interesting. I tend to do most of the cleansings I do energetically tend to be for other psychics. So that doesn't mean that if you're not a psychic, I can't cleanse you. I can. I just tend to. I have the super sucker that'll get rid of all those negative energies. So I do let people know, like, you're not going to feel good for a couple days after I cleanse you. You're going to be nauseous. You're going to have a headache. You're going to need to drink a lot of water. Just make sure before we do this that you have a couple days to rest. Because if you have a busy schedule, let's push it out, because it will take you down. And
I think there's also the misconception that when you are an energy healer that, well, you know, heal thyself, just go take care of it yourself. But as it turns out, like, we can't see all of our own stuff either. So we need each other.
Like, it's like therapists needing therapists.
Right.
Like, you know.
There you go. That's exactly right.
This is why there's usually a coven.
And then to have somebody. Yeah. So did you ever have a coven changing directions?
No.
Do you work with others?
I do work. No. I work with others. I feel like, I don't know. I feel the way I work with others would be like how I work with you, where it's an exchange where we swap. I don't do well in confined, organized spaces. It feels very restrictive to me. So the idea of a coven and having rules to follow, I'm like, no, my soul does not respond well to that. I'd like the free exchange that happens where I can help you and then you can help me, and it doesn't have to all be at the same time. And that just allows things to flow, because sometimes I help you and then you help somebody else and then somebody else comes and helps me. And yeah, so I like to just kind of let it be, but I love working with other people. As I just don't want to label it.
Well, and it allows the relationship to be more organic and the friendship to blossom more organically, which provides for better energy sometimes, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Right on. That's interesting, because in Scotland and or the UK in general, you know, all of the Celtic and the pagan religions were all very group centric. But there is also lore of, I'm just going to use the word witches just for fun, just as a nice blanket term, but there were witches that were operating outside of those organized spaces. So that makes me wonder, you know, did you have a bad experience in the UK at some point, you know, maybe, I don't know, 1300 right. or 680 in a group, and you're like, that's enough for me. I'm just going to be a solo witch from here on out.
I mean, probably. We've all had group projects, so.
And you know Mel would have been the one that did all the work. That's right. And everybody else drafted her. Right on. So how have things evolved for you as a professional? Because this isn't the capacity that I met you in. I met Mel at a writer's conference, y'all, and she was... you know, she's a self-published expert. So she's one of these people that would help people get their book, you know, into the marketplace outside of traditional publishing. And I remember seeing it like the Comic Cons, because we're both those kinds of nerds. And you were always Captain America. Yeah. And I was like, hell yeah, I need to know this person. your costume was always the bomb. And then very slowly, you know, we started figuring out that we had, because, you know, we don't always walk around broadcasting this about ourselves. But for you, you had and have a whole professional life that is, you know, outside of your psychic skills. Can you see a time where you might step into that fully?
Step into the psychic skills fully professionally?
Yeah.
No. And for me, it comes down to, I've gone back and forth in my journey a lot. So I used to be a teacher. And one of the reasons I quit teaching is because being a teacher, I had to really shut it down. Because a lot of people get weird if a witch is teaching their kids. And yeah. The kids love
they
it.
They only knew how many of the teachers were witches.
And I am not good at disguising. My kids always knew, and I taught middle and high school, so that they could tell from a mile away. They knew. It didn't matter. Like, I am who I am. It's very obvious. Yeah. Even if it's not, even if I have my professional hat on and I'm trying to subdue it, people are always like, there's something about you, something mysterious, otherworldly, whatever, it comes through. And so when I had to kind of shut that down, my perception, in order to do this job, that was turning off a huge part of me. And I got severely depressed and was not in a good place. And so that's one of the reasons I quit teaching, was it wasn't a good environment for me. Yeah. And so that's when I went into the business that you're talking about, Trey, and had the publishing services company and went more writing full time. Because at least in that sphere of things, you're going to conventions and Comic Cons and people are quirky and weird and yeah. very open-minded. And so I could allow
the weirder the better.
Weirder the better.
They want you to be weird.
Yeah. And so I was able to work on finding that balance between my professional persona, my psychic persona, and my weird little geek who I am inside. And what I found for me is that I do best when I do have a 9-to-5. I love the stability. And right now, it took years, but finally my manifestation came through and I have my dream job and I love it. It makes me so happy and to be in this professional capacity. And so it's really rewarding and fulfilling. And then the healing work that I do and becoming a grief coach and a death doula, I took those steps, one, because my guides told me that that was what I needed to do. Because I kept asking, like, okay, I have this mediumship thing and I'm tired of souls crossing over while I'm sleeping because I'm not getting good sleep and I'm having nightmares. What can we do?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down. What? Explain that.
It's fun to be a medium. So by being a medium, you're basically a doorway. And if you don't have the certain protection on you, you're just an open door. And spirits are drawn to that open door, especially when they are wanting to cross over, needing to cross over. And when you're most open is when you're asleep. Because when you're awake, I'm able to guard it and be like, what is that? No, I don't want to deal with that. Go away. But then I'm asleep and I'm vulnerable. And so I would have spirits come to me while I was sleeping and use my doorway to get to where they needed to go. But obviously, I'm dreaming. My brain is still working. I'm conscious. I'm alive. I'm breathing. And so that's where it wasn't really dreams. It would be more that astral plane interaction. But a lot of spirits are very angry. And that's obviously because they have unresolved whatever. That's why they've been here for so long. And that anger would come out at me because I was the one who could finally see and talk to them after not having anyone to process it with. And one, I picked up a ghost in downtown San Diego and brought her, well, I brought two of them back with me to Denver. One of them was just hitching a ride and he departed as soon as we got to Denver. The other one, she was definitely an older woman and from the horse and buggy kind of days, so I couldn't give you a true, could have been 1920s something timeline. Sorry, there was a paw under the door trying to get in, but
it's the guy from San Diego.
So I was asleep and I was having this dream about her. She was very angry, very angry. Wouldn't talk to me, but there was just anger seething towards me. And then I felt these arms wrap around me, like it physically wrap around me. And I immediately woke up and was like, nope, nope. It's one, no touching, no touching. And so I did all my like cleansing. I was like, that's not happening. I'm not okay with that. And that's how I found the Great British Baking Show, because I couldn't go back to sleep and I needed something nice.
And okay, it's so wholesome.
The show is so successful because it's all of us insomniacs, all of us witches being messed with in our sleep. We need Paul Hollywood to calm us down.
That is right. Talk to me about bread.
Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this special episode. Join us next week for part two, where the conversation with Mel continues and we talk about life paths, spirit guides, as well as what it means to be a death doula. Meow, meow.